food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Connected from.
No, I'm still connected.
Reconnected now. But we don't have any music, and I think we're on the air.
Okay, here we go. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Music quit a little bit sooner than we thought it should, or it should have. But anyway, welcome to the program today. Today is Wednesday, January 8th, 2014. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk. And a lot of good things to talk about today, and so we want to thank you once again for joining us this afternoon. Let's go right into the metal markets today. You have gold today down $6, down $6 for gold today at $1,226. You have silver down 32 cents today at $19.63. Platinum up. Was in the green territory today, up $2 at $14.25. Palladium down $5 at $741. The USDX today popped up over 81, 81.04, up 0.17. Crude oil was down another buck today at 92.59. And the paper markets today were down. The Dow dropped about 69 points today, and the Feds released their minutes from last month about all the discussion on the taper, and they tapered cautiously, and that was a big to-do as far as the markets. The markets were up earlier in the day, and they reversed down 16,461. The NASDAQ was up 12 at 41.65, and the S&P basically unchanged 0.38 to the downside at 18.37. And the 10-year yield did pop up over 3 for most of the day today, up 0.06 right now at 2.99%. So, you know, it's pretty much the same old, same old.
Same old. The same old, same old, same old. That's what it is.
Same old, same old, same old.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what I said?
Well, pretty close. You did two same olds, and I did the third one. You were looking for the third term, and it's just same old. It's not an adjective anymore. It's kind of a noun.
So it's three-timers.
Yeah, three-timers.
Right.
In any case, the situation, we seem to be just kind of coasting along right now, moving more sideways than up or down, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that, I guess. But it's always like, seemingly it's It's like being on the prairie 100 years ago and surrounded by Indians, and you wonder when they're going to attack and the rest of that sort of thing. Nobody's attacking right now. Things seem to be pretty good, but you still got your eye open looking for an Indian attack.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, with all the discussion of the great economy, the great recovery, 50 years after President Johnson had started the $20 trillion taxpayer-funded war on poverty, comes out to say that the U.S. has declined and the poor have lost ground under President Obama.
Yeah.
So much for the great recovery. Who is it really helping? The poverty rate has stood at 15% for three consecutive years, the first time that has happened since the mid-60s. The poverty rate in 65 was 17.3%. It was 12.5% in 07. And, of course, they call that before the Great Recession. So you have about 50 million Americans that live below the poverty line. The government had defined that in 2012 as an annual income of just shy of $24,000 for a family of four.
And you know, the Bible says the poor will always be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it appears to be true. And if you're going to start on war on poverty, knowing that the poor will always be with you, then in theory that war will never end. And it will always be a justification for more taxes, higher taxes. Somebody's got to help the poor. It's hard to say what really goes on in terms of poverty. It's hard to say how much of that is simply inherent. Some people just don't have the necessary ability to compete in a high-tech society. And as a result, they're going to be poor. But some people don't mind being poor. It's not cause for concern to them. And if they have to choose between working and being poor, poor is fine. You know, sit back and relax, get by on nothing, and get your television and whatever it is, chemicals that you find amusing. And so I don't know what the solution is, and I'm not being disrespectful to the poor, but the problem is not going to be readily resolved. And there's not a solution to this problem. And there's even a danger in the problem. Insofar as you subsidize the poor, the danger is always that you are going to raise another, therefore you'll raise another generation of children who are born to poor parents and adopt that poverty culture. It becomes part of their heritage and who they are, and they don't mind being poor, especially if they can continue to get more money out of the government, and then they have more children, and before you know it, you got a lot of poor people running around who think they are entitled to be supported by people who actually work for a living. And there's a danger in that. You can't reward poverty. You know, there's a thing, there's a need for charity, I get that. But there's a danger in rewarding and subsidizing poverty, because if you're going to subsidize poverty, you're going to have more impoverished people. You know, I don't care where you set poverty. If you set poverty at, $15,000 a year for one person, all right, say that was poverty. I guarantee you everybody's making $16,000. You say, wait a second, I'm going to work for $16,000 a year, and this guy over here just sits on his butt, stays home, sleeps in, he makes $15,000 a year. It's not going to be long before the $16,000 a year people say, you know, I think I'll live in poverty too. And then the $17,000 and the $18,000 a year people. And it's hard to know how greedy people really are. We are led to believe that people are just naturally greedy and we all want to have millions and billions of dollars. But in fact, some people, they're not greedy in the sense that they want millions and billions. They are greedy perhaps that they want 100% of whatever they do have for nothing. They don't have to work for it, but it doesn't have to be a lot. So it's a confusing issue. What do you do with it? Don't know. Talk to Solomon next time you see him. I don't have a solution. But you have to recognize if you're going to subsidize these problems, you're going to have more of the problems.
And it comes also in the same venue as that is the unemployment. You know, they're after trying to push for an increase in the minimum wage, advocating a Senate bill that would raise the hour. They want to raise it to 10:10 from its current 7:25. And we know that. So, you know, they talk about that by raising the minimum wage, it would lift, you know, almost 7 million workers out of poverty. But then how many would they put into poverty?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It'll lift 7 million workers.
It'll put 10 million back into poverty.
If they can keep their jobs.
Yep.
They got a job at $7 an hour. Will the boss keep them? Will the boss keep them for $10 an hour? It'll lift them out of poverty if the boss will keep them. But if the boss says, I can't afford that. The truth of the matter is, especially when you have, when you're in an era when unemployment is high, what's the solution to high levels of unemployment? Is the solution to extend unemployment benefits, or is the solution to reduce minimum wage? Because if you reduce minimum wage and the wage scale begins to fall, more people will get jobs. The employer who won't hire somebody for $10 an hour, he may hire him for $7 an hour. If you reduce the level, you reduce unemployment, well, you make it affordable to put people to work that hadn't previously had jobs. You're not going to make them rich, but they'll at least have jobs. So what's the right solution, Melody? Do you extend unemployment benefits? Do you increase the minimum wage? And if you do, you're going to put more people on unemployment. Mm-hmm. All right? Or do you reduce the minimum wage in order to get people, they'll have jobs, at least they'll have jobs. And there's something to be said about that. A lot of people say, well, I don't want a job for $7 an hour. And I agree with you. I don't want one for $7 an hour either. But there are a lot of people who, by virtue of being unemployed for a year or more, they settle into that. They settle into that culture. They settle into that system of values, and they adjust, and they say, you know, this isn't so bad. I don't have to go to work. I get paid enough money. I make enough money on unemployment to get by. Make a little money on the side the government doesn't know about. Are these solutions, or are these causes for more problems?
The problem is we can't even fight. We can't do anything with these problems because of inflation. Because they're not getting enough in order to subsidize the increase in costs of everyday living. So it doesn't matter what you do until they fix the monetary problem.
I agree.
We wouldn't have
an inflation problem that was worth mentioning if we were being paid in gold or silver.
Mm-hmm. Then it becomes less people in poverty.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea behind this fiat currency is a way of robbing people, and that's exactly what it's done. We look at back, gold was $35 an ounce thereabouts in 1971. And they went off the gold standard completely, and today it's 1,200 and change. It translates into the loss of 95-97% of the value of a dollar. As measured in gold back in 1971, 95-98% of that value is gone. If you had $1 million in 1971, or your grandfather did. Let's say your grandfather had $1 million in 1971. He put it in a trust, and you are going to receive the $1 million today. Hooray! I got $1 million. But compared to what it was worth back in 1971, you've only got maybe $50,000 in purchasing power. And the government, where did the other $950,000 in purchasing power go over the last 40-some years? And the answer is the government got it. The whole thing is robbery. Your grandfather worked to save $1 million. And thanks to inflation, and he said, and I'm going to leave it for the grandkids, and they can have it back in 2014. And guess what? The value disappeared. And who got it? Primarily the government. You couldn't do that. Imagine your grandfather had put away the equivalent of $1 million in gold, back in 1971. And he said, now this is for the grandchildren in 2014. Put it in a trust. Now the grandchildren get it. Ho, ho, ho. Grandkids are going to say, thank you, Grandpa. All right. They're going to have enough money to really spruce up the grave, Grandpa's grave and the headstone and the rest of it. We're going to go out there and polish that up because Grandpa put $1 million into gold back then. What would it be worth today, Melody? Probably about $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
All right? There's the difference in purchasing power. $20 million in gold or $50,000 in paper.
And the whole point is, so for those folks today who are putting things away for their grandchildren and paper, yep. Do you think you're going to escape? No.
Same thing is going on.
Same thing. 30 years from now, we'll be talking about the same thing.
I understand that. And the question, it's not so much a question. It is not surprising that people like ourselves doing radio programs like this one will be talking about the same thing 30 years from now. But the big question, will it all be news to the audience 30 years from now? Will people still be generally as ignorant about the nature of inflation as they are today? Huh? If you don't, here's what's happened. Grandpa put saved $1 million in our little hypothetical example. He saved $1 million of his labor, of his productive effort in life. He made an extra $1 million that he saved out of whatever he made. Maybe he made $20 million in his lifetime. Maybe he made a billion. I don't know what he made, but he saved $1 million, and that is a measure of his effort, his hourly work. And he put it, he had the option to put it into gold or the option to put it into paper. If he put it into paper and left it for the grandkids 40 years later, the grandkids got $50,000 in purchasing power as compared to what Grandpa had saved. He saved $1 million, and the kids got $50,000 in purchasing power. That means Grandpa was never really paid for $950,000 worth of his labor. He accepted a paper promise to pay, and the promise was absolutely perverted by means of inflation. Grandpa never got paid. He worked for free. He did $950,000 worth of labor for free. And he wanted to leave $1 million, but he left $50,000 after in purchasing power to the kids compared to what that million was worth back in 1971. On the other hand, he could have put it into gold. If he had taken gold, he would not have had a promise to pay. A paper promise to pay, which could be reneged on by means of inflation. Put it into gold, he had the equivalent of $20 million in purchasing power in today's money. That's what it would translate into. And I guarantee the kids would be saying, thank you, Grandpa. If they got $50,000 in purchasing power compared to, you know, it's compared to 1971, they'd still be glad. They, oh, good, good old Grandpa. You know, what was his name again? Yeah, that's cool. 50 grand, that's cool. But it's not that big a deal if you have to divide it up among, you know, 3, 4, 5 grandchildren. It's a good thing. You're glad to have the gift. But it's no comparison to 30 years
from now, that 50 grand is going to be 15,000.
Pocket change. Oh, look, Grandpa left me enough to make a phone call. You know?
So again, if you're saving for your grandkids, folks, don't put it in paper. Put it into
if you're saving for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about the grandkids. That's a very nice idea. But what about saving for yourself? If you leave it in paper, you're going to be robbed by inflation. And that's what it is. And people see inflation. We talk about inflation as if it were a natural phenomenon. Something like there's going to be ice in the wintertime. What can you do? It's just the nature of things. No, it's not just the nature of things. It's organized crime. It's theft. It's intentional robbery of the people who actually work for a living. They're being robbed, and that's what inflation is all about. Once you begin to understand that it's not just a peculiar natural phenomenon, it's done intentionally for the purpose of robbing people, all of a sudden you might stand up on your hind legs and say, wait a minute, I don't want any more of that. We'll talk more in a moment. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, and I'm getting an echo. I'm hearing myself
twice.
Do you hear the echo too, Melody?
Not anymore.
Okay, the echo's gone. I'm glad to hear that. I'm also glad that you did hear it, though. You did hear the echo, right? When you start hearing yourself talking and the sound isn't there, then it's time for a vacation. You need a little time off. As long as Melody heard the echo and I heard the echo, then I'm still good to go.
I'm
good to go here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. What's next, Melody?
I'm going to encourage folks to give us a call at 800-375-4188. We got some great pricing and great shipping and great service for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give us a call. Visit our website, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And a lot of good stuff going on, a lot of great coins here at Discount Gold and Silver. And how the ADP came out today, it's a report that come out prior to the employment numbers that the government produces on this Friday. Everybody is holding their breath. They came out today that the private sector employment increased by 238,000 from November to December on a seasonally adjusted basis. And of
this
course,
is the ADP numbers or this is this, the government
no,
numbers?
No, this is the ADP. The government okay. comes out Friday.
Good.
And, that's a lot. And again, holidays, Merry Christmas, Thanksgiving. We'll wait to see until everything gets revised. But so we should see a fairly strong number coming from the government and on
but it
Friday.
Won't be surprising given it that it was over the Christmas holidays.
No. They show an increase of 19,000 in manufacturing, 108,000 in small business jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't buy that.
It's possible. I mean, it includes people that are trying to sell products that are there. The small businesses are hoping people will come do business. They have more salesmen on the floor, clerks, whatever. you know, 108,000, spread that over 50 states, you're talking 2,000 people per state. It's not a big deal.
No, I mean, I was talking of as it being a strong number for other than seasonably adjusted numbers. So we'll see, but, you know, they'll tout it. You have the Obama will be doing his speech on the 20th.
Speaking of Obama, there's a headline from Agence France-Presse, AFP. It's a French newspaper service. IMF chief to visit Kenya. The article's a few days old. International Monetary Fund Managing Director Christine Lagarde will visit Kenya on January 5th through January 8th, a month after the final disbursement of a three-year $750 million support loan for Kenya. Okay. And there's no word on whether Ms. Lagarde will be taking kickbacks at this time for passing out $750 million to Kenya, or if she plans to visit Barack Obama's birthplace. So, today's her last day. If she hasn't been to the birthplace of Obama just yet, perhaps she will today before she flies out of Kenya. That's all I have to say about Obama today. So any of you, though, I recommend those of you who are taking an African safari, if you're going to Kenya, make it your business. Stop in. Visit the place where your president was born. What else, Melody?
Oh, there was one thing I wanted to talk about, but I don't have the information right in front of us. So we can go ahead and just move right along, Al.
Take a couple of quotes. Here's one. So what was true 100 years ago is still true today. Money is gold. But in recent decades, fewer and fewer people now recognize this fundamental principle. As a result, growing misconceptions about money have created the money bubble, which has evolved into the biggest bubble of our time. Given today's unprecedented expansion of credit and blind faith acceptance of money substitutes throughout the world, by money substitutes, we mean paper fiat currencies, and maybe even digital currencies like Bitcoin, but the blind faith acceptance of money substitutes throughout the world, the money bubble, when compared to different bubbles that have wreaked havoc in recent years, will be the most disruptive of all when it pops. This is a quote from James Turk. He made it late last month. It's not, you know, it's a couple weeks old. But regardless, he's making a good point here, or an interesting point. Is fiat money a bubble? Is it a bubble like the technology bubble, the tech stock bubble, like the housing bubble? They create an artificial demand. Everybody wants it. We get overbuilt in housing. The prices of tech stocks go up unreasonably high. Is it fair to think about fiat currency as a bubble? And is that a bad metaphor? Is that insightful or is it irrelevant? Melody, what do you think?
Oh, both.
Fool that I am. You know? Well, I think it's a good insight, and I think it's the sort of thing, and I think he's right. In the end, our money has been gold or silver for thousands of years. And the contention by central banks and governments that we can use paper as if it were gold. And it starts out being allegedly good as gold. That's how we get into the paper. That's how we become habituated to it. We become conditioned to accept paper as being money. How? First, we have gold and silver. And then people start issuing pieces of paper, and they say, wow, this is a gold certificate. And this means you can carry this convenient piece of paper instead of carrying 1,000 ounces of silver in your pocket. You can carry this piece of paper that says $1,000 silver, certified, promise to pay, cross our hearts and hope to die. You can count on us. You can trust us. And people begin, certainly it's more convenient to carry one piece of paper. that's supposedly worth $1,000 in silver, 1,000 ounces of silver, than it is to carry 1,000 ounces of silver. 1,000 ounces, what's that translate into, Melody? Something like 80 or 90 pounds of silver? I don't want to carry 80 or 90 pounds of silver around. This is back when silver was $1 per ounce. Wouldn't want to be carrying that weight of silver, but paper is very convenient. And as long as it's redeemable, we get to where we start thinking that paper is as good as silver. And likewise, we take gold certificates and we say, this is far more convenient to carry this gold, little gold certificate. Carry that around in your wallet. Doesn't ruin the line of your suit. Don't have to strain your back hauling tons, not tons, but tens of pounds of gold around with you. You just got that little piece of paper that's good. But eventually they stop redeeming the piece of paper in with gold. And it's no longer good as gold. It was, as long as you could redeem it. Now it's just paper. People have been habituated where they, well, okay, I'll take the piece of paper. Because I've been taking the piece of paper for so long, and my parents have been taking the piece of paper, that we've come to assume, accept the idea that the piece of paper is money. But it's not. And one of the classic reasons why it's not money is that one of the characteristics of real money is that it is a stable store of value. You take an ounce of gold, if Grandpa puts an ounce of gold in the bank back in 1971, and he leaves it for 40-some years, and here we are, and he's going to hand, he still has an ounce of gold. Whatever purchasing power he had back in 1971 is still there, and maybe even more in terms of that ounce of gold. It is a reliable and stable store of value. Take your piece of paper, put it in the bank back in 1971, and by the time you open the vault and you pull it out to spend it today, you'll have perhaps 5% of the purchasing power that you had back then. Your paper is not good as gold. Your paper does not store value. It is constantly subject to a distortion in value, primarily by inflation. In which case, creditors are robbed. Those of you who put paper in the bank 40 years ago, you got $50 for every 1,000 that you put in the bank. Back then, in terms of purchasing power, you've lost 95%. So, point is, and people don't get this, but money is gold. Gold is money. And we have lost our awareness of that principle. The result, now, do we have a money bubble, a paper currency bubble? He calls it a money bubble. I wouldn't even call a money bubble.
I wouldn't either.
I'd say it's a paper currency bubble, paper dollar bubble.
I wouldn't.
But I think he's right that it's a bubble.
No.
I don't necessarily agree with the label, but I think he's right that it's a bubble. And if it is, and that's essentially what we've argued on this program for several years, sooner or later, this paper currency bubble is going to pop. And when it does, those of you who are caught holding pieces of paper are going to be very much like those of you who took out mortgages on your second or third home because they were so lucrative you couldn't lose in the real estate market, and you took out a mortgage on a second or even a third home back in 2000, say, 5 or 6. How'd that work out for you? In most cases, probably not so well. You probably lost a bunch of your assets because you got caught when the bubble popped, when the real estate bubble popped. You were caught, and you suffered a loss.
So would you call it more of a money bubble, or would you call it a debt? I mean, I can, when I think of bubbles, I think of a shorter term creation of something, not something that has been extended. And to me, a bubble is when eventually everyone runs after it. If I would have to say the bubble then has already burst, because we're continuing to see a lack of respect for the U.S. dollar, lack of interest, lack of people don't want it. It doesn't hold the same, you know, value.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. What are you going to say about a currency that's lost 95% of its value in the last 40 years?
Then I would say the bubble has already popped.
I'd say it's leaking. I'd say it hasn't popped.
95%
it went flat. But, well, yeah,
5% is a big drop.
Well, I agree. I agree, but it's been, it's not, it didn't pop. It's gone, if you catch my drift, you know, it's just leaking 2-3% a year over a course of 40 years.
I mean, I think we have certainly seen a huge debt bubble, and which is our treasuries. I mean, that is the true bubble that we face at bursting and bursting quickly, to where so many things are attached to these rates and are the government's ability to maintain and to make payments doesn't happen anymore. You see those interest rates rise, and it's all over. Everybody's so excited about our budget deficit shrinking. Well, you know, take a peek at why it's shrinking. It's again, it's all smoke and mirrors. These problems aren't going away. They can't go away until they fix our monetary policy.
Yeah.
Fixing the monetary policy, we have to eliminate the fiat currency.
Yeah. And the bizarre thing about, well, that's our argument, and it certainly seems to be true. There, every bit of history, this isn't a new phenomenon. This isn't the first time they've tried fiat currencies. According to one report, there have been 235 attempts or thereabouts in the history of the Western world where people said, oh, let's try to work with paper. This is a heck of an idea. And virtually every time, it blows up in everyone's face, although there are, according to the report, there are something like, I don't know, 2-3 dozen of fiat currencies that are still in effect today, but they've only been in effect for a relatively short period of time. The other 200, they've all blown up. These will blow up too. That's the implication on this. We can't tell you it's prophecy, can't say it's God's truth, can't say that absolutely, positively, there's no way they'll ever be able to make this paper or digital currency work instead of gold. But you never know. It's not impossible, but it's very, very improbable. You can't look at it, in my opinion, and suppose that you're better off to hold cash for the next 10 years. I don't care how much you got. You can either put it into cash, bury it in the backyard, or you can put it into gold and bury it in the backyard. Now, which container would you rather dig up 10 years from now? The one that had 10 ounces of gold, or the one that had $12,000 worth of genuine fiat Federal Reserve notes? Which one do you want, Melody, in 10 years?
Well, I do believe it is designed to fail, because I don't think the question is that the dollar won't be continued as a currency. It's what it creates that fails, that destroys the fiat currency.
When you say designed to fail, what fails?
The acceptance.
Well, it's not just the acceptance, but here's what really fails. And although
the accountability. I mean, you build a monster.
You're on the right track here, to my mind, but here's what fails. The creditors are being robbed. Eventually, you're going to run out of people. People are going to sit back, just like we were talking about living on welfare. It's a lot of people don't find it that troubling. All right, poverty, yeah, okay, I don't have a new Cadillac every year, and I can't fly my own jet plane and the rest of that sort of thing. On the other hand, I can sleep until I feel like getting up. I'm not overly stressed, and it's kind of cool to be living, you know, in poverty. If it doesn't bother you, it's actually can be a comfortable lifestyle. When, therefore, people stop producing, if they can find a way to live inexpensively, they stop producing. They stop making a contribution. Something similar is happening to the creditors in the world. They sit back, they make money, they are productive members of the community, they save, they're diligent, they save their money, and then the money is consumed by inflation. They are systematically robbed, and when we run out of enough of creditors, there will be no one to pull the plow. You can't keep robbing creditors and expect the society and the economy to hold together. Sooner or later, the creditors, the people capable of working, say, to heck with this, I quit. And then what? That's when it goes down. You can't rob the critters. Let's take a break, a couple more commercial announcements. Be right back. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedar, Simon Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis.
Hi.
Getting an echo again. I'm, as much as I enjoy the sound of my own voice, I don't like it that much. Frank, I want to thank you for turning off the echo the second time. Frank is getting good at that now. Frank is our producer, of course.
Not only never mind.
Frank says there's no echo at his end.
Well, all right.
So what? We're going to blame somebody for that echo, but maybe not right now, Melody.
We'll get to that
another time.
We got a question coming in from
Dean.
He wants us to ponder what he has written. He found a website that shows inflation that goes all the way back to 1800. And I've seen those websites. There's a couple of them out there where you can, you know, see the inflation over the years. $100 in 1800 only purchased $58.10 in 1913. He has seen some evidence that our Revolutionary War was really over the banking system. He thinks that maybe this is some proof that perhaps it was.
Well, it's possible. I don't know. Without being able to see the same data that he's looking at, and I'd like to see how that chart runs, but he's saying that a dollar in 1800 or $100 in 1800 that had $100 purchasing power then only had $58 purchasing power in 1914. Is that right?
Yes, 1913.
All right, 1913. And what do we know took place around 1913, 1914? They installed the Federal Reserve System, if I recall correctly. Now, two of the objects of the Federal Reserve, they have two objects by law. One is to prevent inflation, and two is to maintain steady employment, full employment. Those are the two objects, the two objectives that they're supposed to achieve at the Federal Reserve System. It tells us that the Federal Reserve System had to be created at a time when inflation was deemed to be significant. We can always complain of, you know, that there's not full employment. But inflation comes and inflation goes. What the whoever submitted the question, what he's saying is $100 worth of silver in 1800 would only purchase $58 worth of products in 1914. Well, it may be that we just had an overproduction of silver, and I know that that is to some extent true. It may be that whatever forces wanted the Federal Reserve, it may be that they simply caused an outbreak. They made it their business to make inflation happen from, say, 1909 through 1914, maybe 1900 through 1914. I don't know. I'd have to look at the graph. I'm only speculating. I don't know what the truth of the matter is. But they may have caused inflation intentionally in order to say, well, we wouldn't have inflation if we had a Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve could stop that. You catch my drift. They created the problem in order to be the solution to the problem. So is it possible? The numbers surprise me. They suggest that the dollar lost 42% of its value from 1800 to 1914, and the dollar was, during that period, except for the Civil War, was measured in terms of gold or silver. So I'm a little surprised by the numbers, but who knows? There may have been significant inflation in the first decade or so of the 1900s to create a climate where people were willing to say, okay, let's get a Federal Reserve Bank in here, a central bank, and they will protect us from this inflation, which has been difficult and ruinous for the past 5-10 years. So what do you think, Mel? Does that conjecture make any sense, or
no,
do you have a better idea?
No, it's always about money. You know, they can come up with all excuses that they want and fighting for our freedoms and all that, but that's just part of it. It always comes down to the bankers. And,
I understand.
We have another question coming in. Do you think gold will fall to $700 an ounce in 2014?
Well, I hope so. I hope it does. All right? Because all that means is more for me. I don't care. You know, the lower it falls, the more I can buy. It's irritating because it makes what I have saved worth less, at least for now. But if gold dropped to $700 an ounce, I'd be sitting back and say, yippee. Think how many more ounces I could buy. Because I have no doubt the day is coming when they're going to look at $700 an ounce gold and $1,200 an ounce gold and $2,500 an ounce gold, and they're going to think, oh my God, if I could have bought gold at that price, I could be rich. We're going to see gold do some spectacular things. I don't honestly believe that it's going to fall to $700 in 2014. I have no idea what rationale might be behind that prediction, but if it does, I don't care where it falls to. I don't care where the bottom is. I have great confidence that the top is astronomically higher. You know, there are people who talk seriously about $25,000 gold. There's people who talk seriously about $50,000 an ounce gold. I'm not going to say that's going to happen, but I have no doubt we're going to see $5,000 an ounce gold. All right? I have no doubt we're going to see that in the next couple of years. And for that reason, if gold falls to 700 now, yippee. You know, you buy low and you sell high. That's how you get rich, folks. I mean, the lows are the times to buy. I don't believe it's going to go much lower than it is right now. Some people, I've heard people predict it's going to go to $1,000 an ounce. What do you think, Melody? How low can it go?
We don't know. We don't know where it's going to go. But and you're absolutely correct. Stick to the fundamentals, folks. I mean, I even see people reversing their positions on CNBC. Now's not the time to short gold. And these are the idiots on mainstream media to where they ride the market. They set the market up. They work it down. They ride it down. They make billions of dollars riding it down. And then guess what? When it hits bottoms, guess what they do? They write it up. They do it in their paper trading. Yeah. And that's why we see this. And that's okay. It gives us an opportunity to buy low. What else are you going to do? You're not going to be able to fight them. They're going to do it. Until they eliminate for them to do that, it's going to happen. Accept it. And you hear a lot about, do I like it? No, I don't. You hear about gold can't go to 700 an ounce because of the gold production costs $1,000.
Well, 13, 15.
Well, it doesn't
average.
Matter. These mining companies can cut back on their costs. You have oil prices that are dropping, and that was a major increase in why their production was much higher. So there's a lot of things that they can do to cut back their production costs. So you really can't just base it on that. You really have to base it, and because there's a lot of things that also go into the production costs of gold, the way it's managed and so forth. So no, you can't really base the price of gold on that. What you base the price of gold on are the fundamentals. That's where you base the price on gold and why it's going to go to those much higher levels of 3,000, 5,000, and possibly higher. But we buy gold to preserve our wealth. We'll be able to purchase things in the future with our gold, pennies on the dollar. That's where the real wealth comes in. So you can either keep paper and lose it, or buy the insurance that protects it and protects your wealth.
Now, here's the problem. We're going to argue that gold is protecting your wealth, but how do we explain gold fell from 1900 to 1200? Didn't protect that $1,900 in wealth that people had bought in there. There's a problem.
I don't look to gold as protecting my wealth on a day-to-day basis, month-to-month. It's a long-term investment.
Yeah, well, there's another explanation for this.
But
we're not looking at the price of gold falling from 1900 to 1200. We're looking at the price of paper gold.
Mm-hmm.
Paper gold is just as subject to inflation and deflation as paper dollars. It's the same racket. We used to have money backed. We used to have a paper currency that was backed by gold. Now it's just flat paper currency, and it's losing its value significantly. It's lost 95% of its value since 1971 when it shed all its relationship to gold. We have a COMEX market where there are 60 ounces of paper gold sold for every 1 ounce of physical gold. And the result is COMEX only measures the price of paper gold. But we see talk of premiums in India, for example, where they are allegedly paying a 20-25% premium. You want an ounce of gold in India, you want to buy it over there, it will cost you 20-25% more than an ounce of gold will cost you in terms of dollars here in the United States. What does that mean? They call it a premium. It's not a premium. It's a recognition that physical gold is far more valuable than paper gold. And the problem we have in this country is we have not identified, recognized, and appreciated that distinction. We in this country continue to believe that the price quoted on COMEX and the London Bullion Market and so on, that's the price of gold. No, it's not. It's the price of paper gold. And if you want to put your money into paper gold certificates right now that are issued by COMEX, right? And you want to put these in a vault, assuming this were even possible, where you can put them in a vault, put them in a safety deposit box, and leave them for the grandkids 40 years from now. You're going to see the same thing happen to those paper gold certificates. They are going to be worth 5%, 10% of what they are today in terms of purchasing power, in terms of real gold. The problem, when we talk about the fundamentals of gold, we need to understand in our own minds that we're not talking about the fundamentals of paper gold. When we look at the fundamentals of gold, we have to admit that we don't know what the price of physical gold is. What is the price of physical gold? There is no significant physical gold market at this time in the world, although one may be coming up in Shanghai. All right, where they trade only gold. That may be in the process of being established right now. You and I don't actually know. We can buy gold. I'd buy gold today for $1,225 an ounce or thereabouts. Right? Is that the price? Well, yeah, but is it the value? No. There's a good chance that gold today is worth $5,000 an ounce. I couldn't convince people. I'm not going to be able to sell any. You know, I can't sell it for $5,000 an ounce. I know people don't believe that, but we don't know the real value of gold today. We know a price of paper gold. We don't know the value of physical gold. So we look at fundamentals, and we can say, whatever the value of physical gold is, it's much higher than the price of paper gold, and not a little bit higher. I mean, India is just beginning to get a 5% premium. They're recognizing that physical gold is worth that much more than paper gold. But we could easily, it's not the least bit inconceivable that the real value of physical gold might be $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 right now, physical gold, as compared to the $1,225 for paper gold. We just don't have a market to establish that price. So we look at fundamentals and we essentially dream of the day when such a market will exist. And they'll sit back and say, hey, I'm not selling my physical gold for less than $5,000, maybe $10,000 an ounce. Who knows? I don't know how high it's going to go. But that's the problem we're dealing with. What's the real price of gold right now, Melody? You know the price of paper gold, but who knows the price of physical gold? What's it worth?
And when you have the system begin to fall apart, there's a lot of predictions for the first and second quarter. I haven't made up my mind if I'm ready to get back on those. There's talk about resets of the U.S. dollar. That's been talked about for a couple of years. And, you know, we've talked about it for 4 years ago and 5 years ago. And, you know, I'm not quite sure, you know, if I can be behind that for the first quarter, the second quarter. However, things are coming.
Yeah, I know.
These problems aren't going away.
No.
And it's the only thing that they can do, and it will happen. We just don't really know the time.
Yep, that's the question. I mean, reality, in the end, I don't think they can run their lies forever. That's my fundamental economic argument.
And
I don't think the government can lie to us forever.
The problem, Al, is so many people buy gold only because of these situations instead of looking at the true fundamentals for gold and silver. And yes, it brings attention to why people need to own gold and silver, and that is a good thing. But what happens so often is they buy for this reason, the reason doesn't happen, and then they sell their gold and silver, and then they don't have it when they really need it.
I understand that. It's a subject for another day, Melody.
Yes, it is.
Because we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Dadask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.